You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Colton Bushy was shot in the head after being in a car that drove onto someone's property in Saskatchewan on Turtle Island in Canada. Bushy and his friends had been looking for help with a flat tyre, though Gerald Stanley, owner of the property, fired the shots. This weekend he was found not guilty of second-degree murder and manslaughter. In the light of this case, which highlights an issue of missing and murdered First Nations people in Turtle Island, Lillian Hanley spoke with visiting scholar Sarah Hunt.
So I'm Sarah Hunt. I'm a Kwagil from the Kwakwaka'wakw First Nation in what's now called Canada. And I'm an assistant professor at the University of British Columbia.
You do a lot of work in the missing and murdered Indigenous women's movement. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so I became involved back in the 90s, partly because a family friend went missing from the downtown east side of Vancouver, and there was a lot of movement at that time for the police to take cases of missing and murdered Indigenous women seriously. There was just, you know, dozens and dozens of women who'd gone missing or been found dead, and the police weren't taking them seriously. So that was when I became involved, and since then there have been, in that case, a serial killer was arrested. There was the remains of over 32 women found on his farm, and but there have been thousands of similar cases across Canada. And now there is a national inquiry happening, but, you know, the daily violence on the ground is still ongoing. So there's lots of community mobilization to try to stop the violence, essentially, in kind of the everyday ways. So the national inquiry is a government appointed process, and it's still ongoing. So we're waiting to see what changes come of that.
This issue is ongoing, right? You have a racially motivated and targeted violence against not only women but people, First mm-hmm. Nations people. What does that look like today?
Yeah, there are. I guess for me, what I see are, you know, the cases that make it into the news are the worst cases, so murder. But the everyday kinds of violence, racially motivated violence, as well as intergenerational violence resulting from residential schools, that's also ongoing. So there's really multi-layered forms of violence that Indigenous young people and, you know, and our families and elders as well are facing. And I think there's sort of two levels of change that people are trying to, many levels, but, you know, the two main ones that I see are really trying to change a racially biased system that allows very serious crimes like murder, as well as, you know, other kinds of violence to be treated lightly or just to be normalized, essentially. The law often puts survivors or their families through, you know, re-traumatizing processes where they are seen as the problem, not the people who, you know, assaulted them or murdered them. And so trying to change that system and at the same time to create community-led solutions, because the system is just simply failing Indigenous people.
What are those community-led solutions?
I think, you know, importantly, they're varied. So there are many, many, many First Nations, many Indigenous peoples or communities in Canada, so distinct languages, distinct cultural groups. And each community is really doing what it needs to do on the ground. I think, you know, there's also a variety of, levels of willingness to address those issues. So for some communities, they might be addressing the violence ongoingly for many generations, whereas for others, it's still very much not talked about or, kept quiet. So So solutions might be things like creating a transition house or a community response team, finding ways to respond to violence because the systemic kinds of supports just aren't there.
What about on a sort of nationwide level? What sort of resistance is happening in terms of trying to shift these attitudes in the country?
Well, I mean, I, I think for me, what I've seen over the years, because I've been involved since I was a teenager, is really the waves. So there might be a case right now. We have the case of a young 22-year-old man who was shot in the head and killed. His murderer, the man who was, he admitted to shooting the gun but said it was an accident, was found not guilty. So there are people right now, you know, rallying, mobilizing, you know, saying that this is a racist, this is, you know, the latest evidence of a racist system. But over the years, there have been many cases like that. And so, you know, I think creating a sustained effort and continuing to pressure for change is really, you know, it kind of comes in waves. I think that communities, Indigenous people, are aware of the violence every day, but, you know, Canadians in general still can kind of pretend like, oh, this is just an exception, when we know that this is actually the way that the system operates. So, you know, the majority, our jails in Canada are you know, filled with Indigenous people. They're really overrepresented, so really seen as criminals, where, you know, here we have a white man who killed an Indigenous boy and is found not guilty. So, you know, those kind of inequities, the systemic inequities, I think people still don't really realize the extent of these many generations of criminalizing Indigenous people, and also at the same time treating violence against us as normal. And so, yeah, right now I feel hopeful whenever there are, you know, hundreds of people showing out in cities across the country to say that this is not okay. But I just hope that this continues, you know, after this dies down. And also, they're going to appeal the case in this particular instance. But even if, you know, one verdict changes, which I hope, you know, people hope that it does, so that it shows it's being taken seriously, that the system is still inherently flawed. It's still, you know, biased against Indigenous people. So, yeah, I think there's people working both inside the legal system and just mobilizing on the ground, trying to say that this is not acceptable. And, I mean, for me, you know, it's really people need to grapple with the fact that this is how colonization works. This is, you know, this is what makes colonialism successful, is to build systems that are not geared to value Indigenous people as people. And that's really at the root of it. So,
yeah, as you say, I mean, this acquittal, the announcement of this acquittal was just this weekend. Mm-hmm. And you know, people might think that it's an exception, but it's not necessarily an exception. And also, you know, recognizing that this is in connection to a number of other issues that target First Nations people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think that's really, when we think of missing and murdered women, it's really women who have led the, you know, the charge in communities all across Canada, and also, you know, family members, survivors of women who have been killed. And there have been also cases of men, and I mean, it's everyone, really. There's children taken into care who also die or are abused. There's, you know, it's really multi-leveled. And so I think understanding the connections, but also the specificity, like the type of violence that Indigenous women face, which is, again, we see the worst cases in the news. We don't see the everyday abuses and treatment. And that's what, you know, it's all interconnected. And so I think it's really for me, it's like, it's an enormous, it's not something we are meant to comprehend, the extent of the violence that that our loved ones are facing. And so, you know, it's hard for people to really grasp that, how widespread the problem is. We have a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add on that?
For me, what's really important is to see that there have been generations of resistance and mobilization and, you know, making do with little resources or no resources to try to create change on a local level. And that work is really undervalued. You know, we see land-based struggles in the news, and people see that as activism, as Indigenous resistance. But we don't really see these, you know, the more intimate forms of resistance, which is about, you know, when violence happens, is about creating kind of ways to support people or respond to that. I think we need to really, that's, you know, what a lot of my work is focused on is valuing that as political work as well, because it's about our lives, you know, and we really need to resist on all fronts, I think, and create change and think about decolonization on all fronts. So, yeah, I think the more we value that, that kind of everyday work of resisting violence and calling out the state, not just when sort of bigger cases come, but every day, because it's happening every day. So.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.